Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banished civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
From America's Farm to Fork capital in Sacramento, I'm Amber Stott, Chief Food Genius and founder of the Food Literacy Center, a nonprofit that inspires kids to eat their veggies and understand why. Raising Kale will chronicle the stories of food thought leaders that include chefs, farmers, doctors, leading experts, connecting them back to the communities that are building resilience around a fractured food system. Today, our food is linked to obesity, climate change, workers' rights, and so much more. It's time we understand the story behind the food we eat and the impact our food choices have on our health, the environment, and our economy. It's time to start raising kale.
It's the magic, and you know, it's the most beautiful way to be connected to someone. It's the you know, there's only one more frontier of intimacy, really.
For our season one finale of Raising Kale, I have a special guest. When rock star Gavin Rossdale heard about this podcast, he offered to lend his celebrity status to help us get the word out. We're so grateful to him for the support. Rock stars have a history of creating change in our food movement. Food and music have a unifying quality. They bring people together around issues that are complex and even depressing, and they help fill us with hope. Farm Aid comes to mind, Willie Nelson's effort to save farmland, and Bono's One campaign to address global development and nutrition. I'm so pleased that Gavin Rossdale is joining this effort as my guest today. When he's not singing and playing guitar with Bush, Gavin's passion is cooking. Gavin, welcome to Raising Kale.
Sure. It seems so accomplished and so many great things. I guess you had, I was like, am I meant to be on this show? I didn't start a food bank. I'm a terrible person. I help everyone around me.
Exactly. And I just want to thank you for also lending your platform. And I think it's super cool that you are taking your time to weigh in, because I hear you're somewhat of a kale raiser yourself.
I love kale. Wonderful vegetable. And I have, you know, three young boys. And so it's an interesting balance always for them to eat healthy. I have 7, 12, and 14. So I have a wide range. Now, the older one mainly wants to eat kale. He's very mindful. The younger one only wants to eat steak or bolognese sauce and is terrified of vegetables.
Oh.
And so I always, you know, for the other two, I spend a lot of time working my vegetables so that my kids eat them and love them. So, yeah. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm an idiot maniac cook.
I hear you cook a lot. And that's an important part of raising kale, right? Because when we cook, we control what's in our food and we can get all that good stuff in there, like those vegetables for our kids. So, you know, talk about how you fell into cooking. I know a lot of chefs, actually, that love both cooking and music. And so are there any similarities that you see?
Huge. First off, I 100% would have been a cook if I hadn't been a musician.
Interesting.
I would have ended up in the restaurant world.
And why do you say that?
I just think the kitchen brigades and the way that great kitchens run,
yeah,
it's just really inspiring. And I just follow. I love the whole culture of food. You know, I'm European, very lucky. I grew up around many, many, much varied food. And then I started cooking a bit later in my life, but I don't know. It's just Miles Davis said that every musician should be able to cook, and I like the idea of the alchemy of cooking. Like, I have a bizarre ability to cook for 20 people, you know, and like I can just do it, and it doesn't really faze me. And I've got, you know, I'm terrible at many things, so it's not my toot my horn, but it's like for some reason, cooking doesn't stress me.
Mm.
I can do it. I can present lots of dishes. I cook for 6-8 people every single day.
Because you can perform to a big audience. So cooking is kind of a performance.
Yes, I suppose so. Yeah, for sure. And I just work everything backwards, and I want everything to be beautiful, and I want the food to. It's part of my culture. It's not just about the goodness that they put in their bodies. For instance, the kale thing. We have a very nice system. I've got three boys, and I have a Manny and an assistant. So the six of us sit at the table. No one interrupts anyone. Everyone is talking, has the floor. It's really respectful. Mm. You know, people scatter around the house doing their things, and they come. We have meal times. We sit there, long, leisurely dinners. And it's just all part of it. You know, the food inspires the conversation. The conversation inspires, for me alone and my assistant, should we drink a lovely glass of wine. We're having a great time. And that the nutrients, it's just, that's my job. You know, it's just, I believe in the balance of things. You know, I would never give them only kale. I would always give them kale. And, you know, with me, it's all about flavor and things looking beautiful. And my two older kids are like, we always had a deal. It's got to eat, try anything. And then I don't care if they want to have it. They have to try it.
So that's great.
From an early age, they're really extreme eaters. I mean, like extreme, really good brains, you know, you're all vegans there. They're not vegans. But I mean, I come from a different movement where, because I'm an omnivore, I think you should eat entire animals, nose to tail eating.
So absolutely.
I'm very much part of that. And then about 2 years ago, I started to be thinking, I read this book about, called Every 12 Seconds. Mm-hmm. And it's about the meat industry, the industrialization of the meat industry.
Yeah.
And it's abhorrently done, and the way that the whole industry has been turned on its head, and makes me stop eating meat. I don't eat that much meat.
Yeah, it's so
because
important.
I don't want to support that. Yeah. But what I do want to find is purveyors, smaller places that raise and butcher their own meat, so that if my kids want it, I can find a sustainable place, and the animals haven't suffered in the way that they do. You know, the industrial age. If you read, you know, any anthropology books worth their salt, you know, it's just the Industrial Revolution, it's come back to haunt us, you know, the climate, the treatment of animals as non-sentient beings.
Where does this passion come from for you, for food and for caring about the planet? Where does that fire in your belly come from?
I just can't imagine not having that. This morning I dropped my kids at school and I decided I had a morning free, take my dog, get a coffee, walk on the beach. And as I was walking down this pristine beach, I love it so much. It's really hot, freezing water, but hot sun. And I saw a poop bag on a rock. You know, their dog had taken a poop. So they just popped it on the rock. So your dog just, you know, did his business, as anyone who has an animal should be mindful, or a child or anything. You're not anything responsible for. So you've gone as far as picking it up, put it in a bag, but you just popped it on the rock.
It is a pet peeve of mine
as
well.
Staggering. So embarrassed for that person. They exist in this world. It just drives me nuts. So I think that I'm very, very passionate and clear about that if everybody of their different beliefs, creeds, denominations, hairstyles, fashions, whatever, there's a perfectly good way of all living, cohabitating. That is to be mindful and cognizant of other people. And so if the endless, you know, if we're losing 75% of the Amazon rainforest is lost due to deforestation for animal raising, I think we've got something wrong. The math is wrong. So everybody's got to take a little step. You know, there's this other book, We Are the Weather, amazing book, and it talks about climate change. It's saying that if you forfeit breakfast and lunch, meat, in your diet, you sort of save, I think, 1 million tons of CO2 per person. My last girlfriend was vegan. And I really enjoyed to be challenged to cook pure vegan, pure vegan, never, no animal products.
What's something vegan that you've cooked recently?
Well, my latest really fun thing is a red cabbage. Take a cabbage, a fennel, a piece of fennel plant, maybe an onion, maybe some garlic, also cauliflower. So I roast them for maybe 3 hours at 300, just with olive oil, just to break them down. And the cauliflower looks beautifully golden, and it takes on this very, very crunchy exterior and a soft interior. Then you make wedges, and I make a beautiful plate of all these different color wedges.
Yeah.
And then I make a sort of like a garlic and lemon butter. Mm. You can use vegan butter, and put that and lay that sauce over it. And then I take the fennel and the onion and the garlic, and I puree them. I make a little puree of that. Then you put like a lovely puree on the plate. Then you put a wedge, a beautiful wedge of cauliflower that's crispy and cooked and soft. And the red cabbage that you think is going to be really hard, but you press it and it just gives. You put the garlic on that, you know, and the sauce on that, lemon garlic sauce.
You're very passionate about the sensations of the food, the color, the texture. Yeah, you're so apt at describing it.
Well, I would show you because I photograph it every day. Like, you know, I follow all great chefs and great platings, and like, I'm super. It's not uptight because it's actually your act of servitude. So it's not uptight. It's very giving. It's like if you came to my house and made you a beautiful meal, you'd be like, oh, you know, it looks so beautiful. You know?
Is that an invitation?
Yeah. Is that an invitation?
Sure.
I'm there.
If he was a female in his house has got too many men in it. So, yeah, that's, because I think that, again, it goes back to what you say about how do you get kids to eat vegetables? Yeah. You know, make them beautiful. I made the other day a salad that just took broccoli florets, And celery. Mm. And I cut the celery up, fine dice. And I soak it in mirin and rice wine vinegar. So it's submerged. And, you know, for a couple of hours, then you take it out. It's not drenched, but you take it out. And the green, the broccolini goes nuts. And my 12-year-old took a bite of this popping. It's like pickling. It's a quick pickle.
Yeah, yeah.
He just said, can you please make this more? I was like, okay. Because I use all that stuff, you know, very Japanese flavorings a lot of the time, you know, and just basically trying to make the five tastes all bounce around in textures and colors.
I love it. And did you grow up cooking? Was there someone that influenced you in your cooking?
No, I don't have any of those lovely hearth stories. No. Basically, there was a rotisserie chicken I used to have. There was a place I went in Spain when I went on my family holiday with my dad when I was a kid. And they had this rotisserie chicken. And I'll never forget that chicken because it was caked in salt, pepper, and some, I think, rosemary. And they just would and roast all day. And we'd go there as kids. And being from London, where it was a bit grey in the 70s, I didn't know the food could do that. It was like this sensation.
Yeah.
And I'm always trying to recreate that, in a sense, mm-hmm. that sort of sensation. You picked up on it, that I do feel the sensations, you know, of food. And, you know, I give food to people all the time where they just, like, lose their minds. You know, you put a bit of sea bass in some sea salt, and then you know, you can either put the lemon rinds or the rosemary or egg white, whatever, or just water, but you just roast it in that 20, 30 minutes. You check it with a knife through the hard crust. Mm. Make sure the lip is warm, and then you take that out, and then you put a little olive oil with a little balsamic vinegar in it. Then you dip that into the fish. You take it out very carefully, no salt. Take it out, fillet mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. People think you're the greatest chef that ever lived.
I think it's cooking feels complicated for people, and the foods that you're describing are very simple. And I think sometimes home cooks think it has to be complicated to be good.
You know, you want. The finesse is in the simplicity is where the genius is. That's the detail. Look at, you go to Italy, they're going to do a dish with like, you know, look at pasta. You know, it's even very few ingredients, but it's the alchemy of things. And, you know, cooking is temperature and time. Mm-hmm. Temperature and time. And every single dish that I tell my kids every day is a process. Mm-hmm. It's just a process. So they want me to, I say, what do you want me to make? I'll make anything you want. I'll never make it for a flan. We've been making flans. I love flans. I've never really made one. But I made one a couple of weeks ago. Then I realized that actually when you put the cream cheese, that makes the difference. Because the first one was a bit more grainy.
Uh-huh.
Still looked beautiful. It was perfect. I was like, I know that smooth one. And then my housekeeper, she's Mexican. She said, oh, you know what? Cream cheese. I said, cream cheese. I saw it. I see another recipe there. Put that in. Boom. It took me two attempts.
Yep.
I can nail. I've got that flan down.
Brilliant.
So I say to my kids, just a process, you know, but also people sometimes don't have the time that I, for some reason, I'm literally an idiot for it. I love it so much.
I love your passion for it. It really shows through. I also want to talk about this connection between music and food because you're a famous rock star. So we have to. Is it the creativity? Is it the passion? What is it about that intersection?
It's the magic. It's the magic. And you know, it's the most beautiful way to be connected to someone. It's the you know, there's only one more frontier of intimacy, really, because it's such an intimate thing to sit there, open your mouth, put things in, let people know what you want to eat, how hungry you are, what you're like. You know, it's a great opportunity to understand people. I got to know someone the other night. I went out with someone, this very nice girl who was Japanese. And I got this really beautiful sake, you know, and I really like that. It's really, really nice, actually, ex-Michelin star place. And went for a nice, hadn't been out for dinner, you know, just went out with a friend of mine and getting to know her. We were shooting sake, and I was like, you know, I was quite nice if you let it sit, you know, if you sip it. It's good taste, really good. But I don't want to say it, but I love about her. You know, I was like, we got a shooter here.
Well, and that appreciation for food, I think, for some folks like you, it's a passion and it comes naturally. And for others, it is a learned appreciation. And, you know,
yeah,
like
everybody has their lane. And I always say to my kids, you know, everything's easy once you can do it. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So I have people that just don't have that knack. But there's so many things I can't do. Yeah, I just, you know, the cooking must be like that for some people, I guess.
I also understand you are right now in Australia and you're in rehearsals. And I have, you know, do you cook while you're on the road? How do you eat?
America would have my own bus. Cook every breakfast. No one's going to eat my breakfast in a hotel. The room service is done. It's cold. No. I'm on the bus. I can make breakfast. I can, I'll make things, and then I usually have one or two people from either the band or my tour manager, lovely girl, if they come join me for dinner on my bus, whatever, you know. So I do that. Or I get lazy, but it's so easy to throw things together like a beautiful salad. And just it's going to beat the catering in Ohio. I have no offense to Ohio's catering, but I'm going to murder that catering. You know, three different beans and some beautiful cucumbers and tomato and celery and a nice dressing. And you're ready to go.
And so are you shopping at farmers markets? What is in your pantry?
My pantry is really well stocked. I do a lot of, if I go fancy, I have Regalis in New York from Ian in Regalis in New York. Cause I know a couple of great chefs. One of my really good friends have turned me onto this site. Anyway, so I get like, you know, for Christmas it's like Wagyu and caviar and truffle and just bullshit for my kids having fun, you know? I feel bad during Corona saying that. So I don't take photographs then. But, you know, we had like, you know, they just wanted to experience like A5 proper Wagyu from the Hokkaido prefecture, all that nonsense. And then great mushrooms, baby peaches. I get really weird, all the kind of Asian gochujang, you know, like sort of Japanese, the Korean miso. Mm-hmm. So I'm always trying to like, you know, take all these different flavors. I read a lot of Asian cookbooks and see how they work and what they do. And
what's one of your favorite cookbooks right now?
I've got a Japanese vegan book that I'm reading. I've got this Mark Vetri Italian I was reading last night because I just read up for the week because I've got to cook for the week. Uh-huh. So I just read up what should we make? What kind of weird things are we going to do? You know, different things. Because they get, you know, they got to keep them interesting. So there's that. My favorite of all is Ferran Adra from El Bulli. And he has I can't remember what he's called. It's the Home Cook. And it's basically all their staff meals from the restaurant. Best cookbook. And it has what you have to get, the ingredients laid out, and the timings to make the meal. Mm-hmm. It's genius. It's called the family meal. And it's just so thoughtful, and it's just brilliant. And three-course meal, and they tell you how to do it every day.
And you really are into this process of the cooking. So talk about that. Like, what's your process when you're getting ready to cook for 20 people? That's a lot.
Well, those are going to be holiday times, which I adore and love. And being a single father, you know, you really want to make sure that they have incredible experiences here, and every holiday should be reflected in that, you know. So we have a different number of people to come. I sort of rent my friends to come in and have these, I don't rent, but I invite my friends, you know, other couples, kids. So these big elaborate dinners. And so that's just a case of, you know, writing out the menu, figuring it out, maybe 1.5 days of prep. And just doing it, just in it, and loving it, you know, just into it. Just because I could do 8-hour shifts and doesn't, I'm into it. It's just fun. Then I've got to go swimming and I got to do that. So I'm into it. And what's funny is my kids are trained. Like they know where I am. Mm-hmm. They come find me, hang out. They come in to help with one thing. Do you want to help? Yeah, sure. Make the pasta. We'll make the pasta. We'll make the pasta. The woman made the pasta. It's great, great, great. You want to roll it? No. We're going to take it. The other one comes in. Do you want to help me roll this? Okay. Help me roll the pasta.
That's fantastic.
You know, so they pop in and out. My process is just to be focused on it.
Who are some of the kale raisers who have influenced you? It sounds like a lot of chefs.
Cooking White.
Oh, yeah.
Well, South Sauce is Marco Pierre White in London. He is very famous. Beginning here, he's white light, white heat. He's just the first celebrity chef. In the 80s. And I was like, who's this guy? I wasn't even eating. I had no money. But I thought he was cool. So Mario Batali is a great friend of mine. Grant Ashak, who's a 3 Michelin star chef, is a really good friend of mine and helped me a lot. Did Nings, Dominic Crenn, I'm quite friendly with. Kat Cora, because I did a show with her. I cooked with her for her show. So
love
I did
it.
A...
Love it.
We both did a cook, sometimes cooking. I did a cooking section for Oat Living where I cooked twice. I did a kedgeree for them. I did, I can't remember. Oh, yeah, I did a chicken chasseur, a hunter's chicken for them another time. Like cooking for an hour on Zoom. You know? Then I did a for People magazine. They said, make a favorite dish. I said, I don't have a favorite dish. I cook all the time. So I made a vegan bolognese and I made vegan pasta.
That's great.
To go with it. So that's coming out soon. So. I'm not sure if I'm answering the right question. I'm just reading off a list, but I'm not sure. Was that an answer? Sorry, I got lost.
It's all good. Yeah, no, I appreciate this. And, you know, your list of all the amazing charities that you've supported, Feeding America, Habitat for Humanity, you know, what draws you to do that type of work? That adds to your kale raiser bucket.
To be honest, I don't do enough, and you could ask me to do something. I don't probably do enough. I would do more. I would love to take my kids. You know, I took my kids to some food banks. We handed out toys at Christmas. I sang for No Kid Goes Hungry, Feed America. Mm-hmm. And then I pledged. I asked them if they wanted me to, like, you know, do any more, and apparently not. Apparently I fed them. That was it. My contribution was over. So I was like, okay, but I thought my philanthropy, I think, is very local. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people around me that I definitely am responsible for, so I don't feel like a bad person. But when I read some of the people on your list, specifically the first gentleman, he started with, you know, 4 non-profits and it's kicking out. I was like, God, I'm not a very good person. I'm a very good person. I got to do something about that.
But, I mean, you're making contributions.
No, I am, and I'm very vocal about the whole animal rights to it. You know, within the context of, like, some vegans might hate me because I still allow meat in my house and I still allow animal products.
And I think
I think it's about being realistic.
I think those absolutes are very difficult for most people, right?
What they are is unreasonable. Mm-hmm. You can be, you know, as you know, no, like this, you know, I had this, you know, amazing girlfriend, vegan, wonderful, but I don't know, she has no responsibility. She's not like 3 kids asking for the hamburgers. Now I give them impossible meat or I minimize it, but you know, they're asking me for that. Like, I don't know. I know meat is not as good to these people as we've been led to believe. Like, for instance, I'm in the second half of my life and I'm only realizing the dairy industry has been lying to me forever. I didn't know that. But they've been lying to us. The cows don't want to be pregnant the whole time and they're really not having a great life and the separation of the animals. I'm just like, I want to go to now, I've got to be very careful because I'm really lucky that I can do this, but I would rather go and pay where there's an idealized version of that, where you get milk from a cow that then goes out and hangs out with their kid.
Yes.
I'm that naive. I wish I would like that.
Yeah.
I don't see why it's gotten so industrialized and so extreme all for profit, nothing to do with the welfare of the animals. I was speaking to the guy from the owner, is a friend of mine, of Vitu Farms.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know the company Vitu
Farms. Yeah, they're great. I eat those eggs.
Introduced me to the CEO. We've become kind of friends. And I told him, because I'm working on this cooking show that I'm trying to do, and I was really concerned with, you know, there's 3 billion chicks a year get killed, you know, because they think they don't know what sex they are. As soon as they establish that they're male and they're no good, they kill them.
Yeah.
And they, as we know, they kill them. They just, when they kill them, there's no anesthetic. If they just kill them, throw them into a grinder. I mean, it's just that stuff that I can't get behind, and I just hate, and I just feel so guilty. Even when I say it, I feel horrible for ever eating an egg. So what they're trying to do there is they're doing it, obviously, they put millions into this whole thing to identify the sex of the egg without having to kill the egg, open the egg, or you know. And that's going to be a game changer. Now, that's the kind of thing I can get behind. I mean, that's like, thank goodness. Because it's just so terrible. We've just been like literally lied to for pursuit of money. And it's gotten more and more and more and more industrialized, more and more. And back in the day, you know, 200 years ago, when it'd be like, oh, there's a, you know, dairy got the farm and they'd get this milk. I don't know, like, I just want that.
Absolutely.
And I want my cow. Maybe I've got to get my own cow.
And you call yourself naive for feeling this way, but I actually think the opposite. I think that when people can see and believe in a different world and a different reality and then fight for it, I think it makes other people believe those things are possible. And especially for you, having the voice of a celebrity to say those things, right. I think it really can change the dial.
If I get my TV show made, the platform will allow me to really talk about food in a way that is a bit like, you know, during this time, I think gross displays of, someone asked me to show a painting that I had. I was like, not in this time when people are struggling and dying and losing their jobs, I'm going to show people what I've got. That's an awful thing. And I feel the same way whenever I do a beautiful displays of meat. Mm-hmm. Until I kind of know, feel better about it, I don't portray that. I like being on the side of mindful people that kind of care more about animal welfare, although I could do better because, you know, I'm about to cook something that died downstairs.
But I think that's so, it's so human and it's so relatable because so many people are struggling with these same conversations, right? There's this, I believe this way, but it's so hard. And how do I balance those two?
I'm inevitably going to be doing something wrong. Inevitably, it'll be a better way of doing it. Inevitably, somebody could do it better. But it's going to look good and taste really good. I know. Talking about this is going to be a different perspective.
Absolutely. I love your perspective. I'm so grateful to you for sharing it and for just the passion that you bring and the enthusiasm. It's inspiring, and so many people need to be inspired right now.
Thank you.
You do have a new album, and we should talk about that. So it's called The Kingdom. And you actually say something that's a little bit to what we've been talking about here. You say in an interview that some of the music in this album is about believing in something better and believing in a better world. So, you know, that's exactly what we're doing here, trying to raise kale and roll up our sleeves and make that happen. So talk about how you want to materialize that better world and talk a little bit about your album.
By drawing attention to it. I mean, my songs, I mean, The Kingdom, it's a weird one. It's so strange with the process of writing songs. Sometimes you feel it's like almost like you write songs in the dark. Mm-hmm. And then when you see them, when they leave the studio and they belong to everyone else, they take on this extraordinary power. That's like a different alchemy that happens, right? And so it began with, we did John Wick, the soundtrack song for that, as Bullet Holes. So you had in that, there's lines, you know, Race Wars, Star Wars, Planet Wars, and Mind Wars is one of the lines in the song. And nothing could become more pertinent. Then we moved into this, you know, horrific sort of police brutality with the murder of George Floyd. And I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, the names are, the role is endless, as we know. It's continuing 2 days ago, it doesn't end. So to draw attention to that, you know, it's not my job to have solutions. Mm-hmm. It's my job to ricochet ideas. Mm-hmm. That's my job. You know, it's my métier. It's my complete function in life outside of being a dad and a decent tennis player is to just present things. So then we had the second song was called Flowers on the Grave. Flowers on the Grave, and that was spoke about all the isolation, the sadnesses, the emptiness, mm-hmm. and the loneliness. And that's what everyone was going through.
Absolutely.
With the corona, especially people who were not in relationships, or even specifically people that were in relationships. So suddenly we're like, Jesus Christ, I'm more alone than I ever fucking realized. Who is this person? I'm an idiot. And then The Kingdom, which is the last final one, was this whole call to arms, you know, people just soldier on. It's very like, it's about organized, peaceful demonstrations. You know, the ones who just want a fair and just and accountable world. I'm with them.
The ones getting into good trouble.
Yeah, and good dialogue.
I appreciate you talking about these hard issues because I think that silence also says something. And so speaking out is so important right now. And we have too many people who are being silent on these issues. So I really appreciate your voice and getting behind these issues.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what my voice is. You know, I'm a working musician. I got a pretty pathetic global following on Instagram, like 300,000 or something like that. The global equivalent of no one. But it's fun. It's good people. I do love my people. I have it's very active. I do love my gang, but it's nothing. I wish some of the people with a 70, 80, 90 million would take this position. Yeah. I'm just not, it's not my generation. You know, my generation is not really on Instagram that much. You know? Mm-hmm. Just the young people liking the records. You know?
Well, it's greatly appreciated because I think all of these issues, Black Lives Matter and the food movement, we see these connections between hunger and where is hunger happening? It's in Black and brown communities.
How to decently treat people, mm-hmm. the Black Lives Matter, yeah. and how to decently treat the planet. I mean, like, yes. people can't keep thinking of this as sort of like thing. And it's good for us. It's not as bad. But what about our kids?
Yeah.
That's not going to be good. Yeah. I mean, the world's going to run out of water. I just like go, how are you going to run out? How are you going to sustain water? Mm-hmm. I don't know how they're going to do that. They're running out of water in India, in Africa. They're running out of water. They don't have enough water.
And so, we're in another drought here in California coming soon.
Right. I mean, these things, so there's a ricochet, knock-on effect, and if you don't take care of the planet, what do we expect? I mean, all the scientists lose their mind. And thank God we just got back in the Paris Agreement. Mm-hmm. Thank goodness there is, you know, we're part of some unit. The whole thing of like leaving that and like climate doesn't exist. It's like, what you got to do is walk out. It's 95 degrees. It's 95. Yeah. Shit, the desert's back.
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful to you. Is there anything else that you want to cover that I haven't mentioned that we didn't talk about?
No, you're so sweet. No, you're great. And thank you for having me. I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying on and on about this stuff. I like it. It's nice to be able to talk about it. I do care about it.
I mean, the passion is visceral. So I'm very grateful to you. You know, we're Raising Kale is a movement, and it's only beginning. And so having people like you be part of this means so much. So keep raising Great. Kale out there yourself.
I'll keep macerating my kale.
Please. Oh my gosh, that recipe sounded so good with the broccolini and the celery pickles. That sounded phenomenal.
So good. It's so simple.
Yeah.
So good. So simple.
And Kim, our producer, she's going to definitely be taking you up on the offer to dinner.
Okay. All righty.
And with that, Gavin Rossdale has the last word on season one of Raising Kale. I'm so grateful for his time and his vocal support of this work. A hearty thank you to everyone who has been listening to this podcast. I can't thank you enough for taking this journey with me around the world. I created this podcast because I believe so strongly that the first step toward change is understanding. I hope that by listening, I've helped bring awareness to new issues for some of you. I hope it inspires many of you to roll up your sleeves and get into good trouble with food. Whether you're planting a school garden, donating to a local food pantry, or even sharing an episode of this podcast with a friend, it all matters. Together, we really can make a difference. As we close this season, I want to thank the team that helps make Raising Kale possible. The ever amazing, my right hand, Kim Kaplan, is our producer. Odyssey is our host. Stacey Kaufman is Odyssey Sacramento's market manager. Nicole Rogers is part of my Broccoli Brain Trust. Jamie Wilson provides marketing support. Fleischman Hillard provides PR support and strategy. Greg Berger of Pomegranate Designs created our logo. Amy Nicole Photography took our photos. My mom and dad, they listened to their very first podcasts because of Raising Kale. Be sure to tune in to season two as I take the advice of season one guests and head out to meet local farmers. From Kalamazoo, Michigan to Clovis, California, you'll hear from these kale raisers and more. Next season on Raising Kale.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all The Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.